5-Minute Under the Sea Stories. Disney, The Little Mermaid. Ariel and the Pearl of Wisdom. Written by Thea Feldman. It was the night before the Pearl of Wisdom ceremony. Ariel was excited. On that special day, King Triton's daughters would each take on an official royal responsibility. The day would begin in the morning when each princess selected a pearl from the palace's pearl room to mark the occasion. In the afternoon, there would be a ceremony to announce how each of them planned to help Atlantica. "What are you going to do?" Andrina asked Ariel. "I don't know yet," Ariel said. "I need to figure that out before the ceremony tomorrow." In the pearl room the next morning, each princess chose her favorite pearl.
"I look forward to hearing what you've chosen as your gifts to the kingdom," King Triton said, hugging each daughter. "May these pearls be a reminder of your royal responsibility."
After everyone had left, Ariel swam to her grotto to think about how she could help the kingdom. Her collection always made her happy. She loved her objects from the human world, and thanks to Scuttle, she knew that each one had a purpose and a story. Flounder appeared. "I'm so excited about your special day," he said. But Ariel wasn't listening. She had spotted something partially hidden in the sand and hurried to uncover it. "We have to show this to Scuttle," she said.
"Ariel," cried Flounder.
"Maybe today is not the day to go to the surface."
"Don't be such a guppy," Ariel responded. "What could go wrong?" When Ariel found Scuttle, she showed him her new treasure. Scuttle examined the object closely.
"I know," he declared. "This here is a thingamajiggy, and you wear it here."
Scuttle reached for Ariel's seaweed necklace and hung the object on it. But the object was so heavy, it ripped the necklace right off Ariel's neck. The pearl, the seaweed chain, and the thingamajiggy all sank.
"Oh no!"
Ariel shouted. She waved a quick goodbye to Scuttle as she and Flounder dove beneath the surface. Ariel looked around frantically. She had to find that pearl.
"Look, Flounder, there it is," Ariel shouted.
They watched the pearl as it hit a starfish napping on a rock. The starfish swatted it away without even waking up, and the pearl flew through the water. Now it was headed toward an octopus. As Ariel and Flounder chased after it, the pearl landed on one of the octopus's arms.
"Wait, stop," Ariel shouted.
When the octopus saw Ariel waving to him, he was so delighted he waved back with all 8 of his arms. The pearl flew loose and sank out of sight as the octopus continued on his way.
"Oh, Flounder," Ariel sighed. "I've lost the pearl. What am I going to do? How will I ever explain this?"
Suddenly, Sebastian appeared.
"I've been looking for you everywhere," he cried.
Ariel could not believe her eyes. There, behind his head, was the pearl.
"Young lady," Sebastian scolded, "you need to get back to the palace right now."
"Whatever you say, Sebastian," said Ariel, smiling. She leaned toward him and kissed him. As the crab blushed, Ariel quickly plucked up the pearl without him noticing. The 3 swam back to the palace. Ariel clutched the pearl tightly in her hand, vowing to take better care of it. At the palace, Ariel made a visit to the royal jeweler for a new chain. It was time for the ceremony. After her sisters made their announcements, it was Ariel's turn. Ariel knew exactly what to say.
"I am going to start a new museum, dedicated to collecting and displaying beautiful sea art in all its forms," Ariel announced.
The entire kingdom cheered and applauded.
"You have made a wise choice, Ariel," King Triton said, "one in keeping with your generous nature. Today, you and your sisters have shone brighter than any pearl ever could."
On opening day of the museum, Ariel couldn't have been prouder to showcase some of the beauty found under the sea. Disney Pixar, Finding Dory. You're it, Dory. Adapted by Lauren Klaus from the original story written by Bonita Garr. After school, Nemo, Marlin, Dory, and all their friends decided to play a game of hide and seek. Dory was it first. Everyone swam to find a hiding place as she began to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, Dory counted. When Dory opened her eyes, she forgot why she was counting. What was I about to do? Lie and sneak? No, why would I do that? Spy and peek? No, that can't be right. Oh, hide and seek, she said, swimming toward Nemo and Marlin's anemone, hoping to find them there. But by the time Dory got to their anemone, she'd forgotten why she went. She had a nagging feeling she shouldn't get too close, but she couldn't remember why.
Yuch!
She exclaimed. Now I remember. I'm not supposed to touch anemones because they sting. As she swam away, Marlin and Nemo peeked out from their anemone.
Where's she going, Dad? Nemo asked. She was so close to finding us.
I'm not sure, Marlin responded.
What was I doing again? Dory asked herself.
She tried her best to remember, but she kept getting distracted and swimming past all her friends.
My spot is so good, Pearl whispered to Sheldon after Dory swam by. Mine too. I love hide and seek,
Sheldon whispered back. Dory even swam past Mr. Ray. She was so excited to see a large patch of pristine sand to squish and play with that she completely missed him hiding beneath it. Mr. Ray smiled, proud of his clever hiding place.
Wait, wasn't I playing hide and seek?
Dory said, finally remembering.
Wow, that guy looks a lot like Hank,
Dory said. What color is he again?
Yellow.
No.
Pink.
Nope, I don't think so.
Blue?
Dory continued to swim through the coral field, and Hank tried his best to blend in with the surroundings as she got closer to him.
That was a close call,
Hank said to himself when Dory eventually swam away, still on the hunt for friends. But as Dory swam through the Great Barrier Reef, she again forgot she was playing hide and seek. She swam past Bailey, who was hiding behind some seaweed, and she swam right over Destiny, who was hiding on the ocean floor. As Dory kept swimming, she spotted a beautiful purple shell.
My mom loves shells, she said. I should give this one to her.
But I haven't seen my mom or dad in a while.
Actually, I haven't seen any of my friends.
Where are they?
That's when Dory remembered they were playing hide and seek. But not that she was it. Uh-oh, I'd better hide quick, she said.
Dory's parents, Charlie and Jenny, watched from their hiding place as Dory swam into a nearby cave. They expected her to come out once she realized no one was there, but after a couple of minutes, they started to worry. They decided to abandon the game and go check on their daughter. Luckily, they found her right away.
Kelp Cake, what are you up to? Charlie said.
Mom, Dad, we're playing hide-and-seek, and I found this great hiding spot. Come in, I'll make room, Dory told them.
But, sweetie, Jenny tried to explain that everyone was hiding from Dory, but before she could, Dory dashed to the opening of the cave. Hank and Mr. Ray were swimming past the cave, and she wanted to help them hide too.
Okay, everybody in, we can squeeze, she said.
But Dory, Mr. Ray began. But before he could get another word out, Dory saw even more of her friends in need of a hiding spot. It wasn't long before the cave was packed. Nearly everyone who was supposed to be hiding from Dory was in the cave with her.
It's gonna be tight, she said. Destiny, suck it in a bit. Watch your head, Bailey!
Finally, Nemo and Marlin wandered into the cave. They were shocked to find all their friends crowded in with Dory.
Dory, Nemo said, what are you doing?
Nemo, we are...
What are we doing?
Playing hide and seek, everyone shouted. The group swam out of the cave as Nemo explained what had happened.
But you're it, Dory. You're supposed to be looking for us.
Oh, I see.
Found you, Dory exclaimed.
Marlin had a solution. Let's just play tag.
Disney. Lilo and Stitch. Adapted by Katherine Hopka. In a distant, remote corner of the galaxy, Jumba Jukiba created Experiment 626, a new species. The Grand Councilwoman of the planet ordered Jumba to get rid of Experiment 626. Just as they were about to escort 626 off to a far asteroid, he broke out. Back at the Galactic Federation headquarters, they tracked 626 as he hurtled toward an unfamiliar part of the galaxy. A control operator pinpointed 626's destination, a planet called Earth. Jumba and his friend Pleakley followed 626 to Earth. Off the small island of Kauai, a young girl named Lilo swam in the rolling waves. When she realized she was late for hula dance class, Lilo dashed from the ocean and tried, unsuccessfully, to slip into class unnoticed. Her teacher wanted to know why she was all wet.
It's Thursday. Every Thursday I take Pudge the Fish a sandwich, Lilo said.
The other students rolled their eyes. One girl, Myrtle, called Lilo crazy. Lilo lunged at Myrtle, but the teacher caught her. After class, Lilo forgot to wait for her older sister Nani and walked home. Not finding Lilo at the hula school, Nani rushed home to find her little sister had locked herself inside. Cobra Bubbles, a social worker, arrived at their house in time to see Nani breaking into her own home. He was evaluating Nani as a guardian for Lilo. Lilo put on her best smile and recited the answers she and Nani had practiced. Cobra gave Lilo his business card. Call me next time you're left here alone. After Cobra left, Nani and Lilo got into a big fight. Later that night, Nani went to Lilo's bedroom to check on her.
We're a broken family, aren't we? Lilo asked. No. Maybe a little. I'll tell you what. If you promise not to fight anymore, I promise not to yell at you, Nani said.
After Nani said goodnight, Lilo saw a shooting star and ran to make a wish.
I need someone to be my friend. Maybe send me an angel. The nicest angel you have, Lilo wished.
Hearing Lilo's wish, Nani thought maybe Lilo could use a playmate. Lilo didn't know the shooting star was actually 626's spaceship, crash landing in a field of sugarcane. Next thing he knew, 626 was waking up in a kennel. Just then, Lilo and Nani entered the kennel to pick out a pet. Lilo chose 626. Nani was shocked.
What is that thing? Does it have to be that dog?
Yes, he's good. I can tell. His name is Stitch, Lilo said. Can I buy him?
Nani agreed and gave Lilo $2. As Lilo and Stitch left the kennel together, Jumba leapt out to capture 626, but Pleakley stopped him, reminding him they were on Earth. They couldn't use their alien technology or make themselves known. Lilo eagerly introduced Stitch to his new home.
This is a great home. You'll like it a lot, Lilo said.
But Stitch proceeded to destroy everything in his path. Lilo objected when Nani disciplined Stitch. Nani wanted to take Stitch back to the kennel.
He was an orphan and we adopted him, Lilo said. What about Ohana? Ohana means family. Family means nobody gets left behind.
Or forgotten, Nani finished. Lilo took Stitch up to her room. Stitch found a book about an ugly duckling. He was curious about it. Lilo explained that in the end, the duckling was happy because he knew where he belonged. The next day, Nani dragged Lilo and Stitch around with her as she went on job interviews. Lilo used the time to teach Stitch about her hero, Elvis. She told him that Elvis was a model citizen, so he should practice being like Elvis. Stitch got started right away, dancing and playing guitar, and he disrupted every interview. When the day drew to a close, Nani still had not gotten a job. Lilo and Stitch were sitting quietly on the beach when Nani's friend David walked up.
Hey, Lilo. Hi, Nani. How are you guys?
We've been having a bad day, Lilo said.
Well, there's no better cure for a bad day than a couple of boards and some choice waves. What do you think? Nani agreed, and they all joined David in the sparkling water. Despite his dislike of water, Stitch became captivated by the sport. And when they returned to shore, he dragged over a board, asking for another ride. As Lilo, Stitch, and Nani headed back out to the water, Jumba saw an opportunity to catch Stitch. While they surfed, Jumba swam up from underneath. The white water of the crashing waves hid Jumba as he pulled Stitch beneath the surface. He swam away from Jumba's grip, but floundered in the waves. Fortunately, David was nearby and rescued Stitch. Cobra had seen the whole incident and was very upset with Nani. Defeated, Nani took Lilo and Stitch home. Stitch felt guilty and hurt. He took the ugly duckling book and started walking toward the window.
Ohana means family. Family means nobody gets left behind. But if you want to leave, you can. I'll remember you, though, Lilo said. As Stitch climbed outside,
he walked deep into the forest, desperately hoping to find his own family. The next morning, Jumba and Pleakley were back to their search for Stitch. Jumba caught up to him in the middle of the forest. Stitch told Jumba he was waiting for his family. "You don't have one. I made you," Jumba said. Back at the house, Lilo told Nani about Stitch.
He left. He didn't want to be here anyway.
Nani began to console Lilo, but David arrived to announce that he had found a job for Nani. After Nani left, Stitch burst through the door. Pleakley and Jumba were not far behind. Lilo called Cobra to tell him that aliens were attacking her house. Jumba was making a mess trying to capture Stitch. Nani returned to the house to find Cobra already there. When he saw what Stitch and Jumba had done to the house, he tried to take Lilo away. While Nani and Cobra argued, Lilo slipped out and ran into the forest. She ran as fast as she could, trying to get as far away as she could. Stitch popped up in her path. He revealed his true alien self to her.
"You're one of them?" she said.
Without warning, another alien named Gantu snatched up both Lilo and Stitch. Nani arrived just in time to see Gantu load them onto his ship. Stitch worked his way out of the containment pod and fell from the ship as it took off with Lilo still trapped inside. Jumba and Pleakley jumped out and contained Stitch. Nani went to confront all three of them. "Where's Lilo? Bring her back!" Nani shouted. Stitch shuffled over to Nani and spoke the words Lilo had taught him. "Ohana means family. Family means nobody gets left behind." "Or forgotten," Nani finished. Everyone piled into Jumba and Pleakley's spaceship. Once in the air, Jumba used his ship to bump Gantu's and sent it spinning. Jumba then blasted Stitch onto Gantu's ship. He crashed through the windshield and rescued Lilo.
"You came back," she cried.
"Nobody gets left behind," Stitch said.
Moments later, the ship splashed into the ocean. David, who was surfing nearby, helped them ashore, where they were met by Cobra and a fleet of aliens, including the Grand Councilwoman. The Grand Councilwoman wanted to take Stitch back to their home planet. Cobra stepped in. "Lilo, didn't you buy that thing at the shelter?" he asked. Lilo nodded. She approached the Grand Councilwoman, who decided to let Stitch stay with Lilo and Nani on Earth. Nani, Lilo, and Stitch were a real family. The spirit of Ohana proved that anyone could belong. Disney, Moana, Pua and Hehe. Written by Suzanne Francis. The feast to welcome spring was about to start. Moana and Grandma Tala were busy collecting shells. Moana's pet pig Pua tried to help, but the shells he found were never empty. Moana was making her father a surprise gift for the feast, an anklet. Moana strung a final shell onto the anklet, finishing it. Just then, Hehe, the foolish village rooster, ran by them wearing a part of a coconut on his head. "Silly Hehe," Moana said, removing the coconut. Hehe turned and started pecking at Grandma's feet. "You've no more brains than a grain of sand," said Grandma, shooing him away. But he just started pecking the sand instead. In the village, preparations for the feast had begun. While everyone was hard at work, Hehe just got in the way. Men were busy building the umu, an underground oven. They piled up pieces of wood, dried husks, and coconut shells. After they started the fire, they added rocks. It wasn't long before the umu was hot enough to roast bananas, fish, and taro roots. Hehe walked on to the hot rocks.
"You'll set yourself on fire, you silly bird," one man yelled, chasing him away.
Hehe ran away and stepped on a partially finished platter woven from pandan leaves. His tiny foot got trapped, but he didn't even notice as he dragged the large platter behind him. Grandma Tala tried to catch him, but as she reached for him, she slipped on the platter. Fortunately, Moana was there to catch her. In all the commotion, neither of them noticed that Moana had dropped the anklet. It landed around Hehe's neck, and he dashed away. "That is it," Grandma Tala said. She wasn't giving up. She grabbed a hand-woven leaf basket and, in one fell swoop, trapped Hehe and cinched the basket shut. He hadn't seen her coming. He was too busy pecking at a rock. But Grandma had been so focused on catching the rooster that she hadn't seen the anklet around his neck. But Moana had just realized the anklet was missing.
"Oh no," she said.
Just then, Pua spotted the basket. He saw Heihei's beak sticking out between the gaps in the woven leaves. When he looked closer, Pua noticed the anklet around the rooster's neck. He was determined to retrieve it for Moana. But first, Pua had to open the basket. He rolled it over and over, but that didn't work. Then, Pua put the basket on top of a stick. He jumped on the stick and sent the basket flying. It fell to the ground, but was still tightly shut. He had to think of another idea. On the ground, Pua saw a long vine. He picked it up and trotted back to the basket. Pua looped the vine around the basket and dragged it along, running as fast as he could. Heihei's legs slipped out, and he ran to keep up. Pua pulled the basket past some villagers. Because Heihei had continued to peck and peck, his head stuck out through another hole he'd made. They passed a man cutting breadfruit. When he sliced it in half, a tasty chunk flew right into Heihei's mouth. When Pua heard music, he knew the feast was about to begin. He dragged the basket toward a slender tree and tossed it onto a branch. Then he jumped up after it. Pua bounced on the branch, and Heihei's basket flew into the air and then back down to the branch. The higher Pua bounced, the higher the basket flew. Finally, Pua bounced so high that the branch flung the basket straight into him. The two animals soared through the air. Pua and Heihei squealed and clucked with glee. When they hit the ground, the basket finally opened. Pua was thrilled. He could get the anklet to Moana. But they rolled right into a large fishing net. And they tumbled right up to Moana. Moana untangled them and gasped when she saw the anklet around Pua's snout. "You found it," she said, giving him a big hug. Later that evening, Moana gave Chief Tui the anklet. "I love it," he said. As Moana and her father hugged, Pua heard a strange sound. It was Heihei. He couldn't cluck because his beak was buried in a piece of driftwood. And he'd gotten tangled up in pieces of the basket again. Fortunately, Pua was ready to help him again.